Let's jump right in. John Najarian is on the phone line. You see him on CNBC and the Najarian family office as well. John, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen.
Okay,
thank you, sir.
Now, it was just a week ago, right? I made a little joke with you. I said, hey, did you notice that the Dow passed the 23,000 mark? And we laughed because everyone was making so much of it. Today, the Dow currently up 201 points. It is at 25,474. So in the matter of weeks, a week, it's picked up 475 points. What's going on here?
Well, same things that were going on before, which is that global synchronized recovery. So instead of us just pulling one side of the boat and rowing around in circles, we've got both sides rowing the boat. We've got Europe, we've got Asia, we've got Africa, the emerging markets, virtually all the markets of significance in the world are at least safe and not erupting with panics like we had with Greece or, and despite North Korea, since they really don't buy or sell anything from the rest of the developed world, they're a non-issue except for their threat.
You know, and what we've talked about so much is that the markets have, we're in earnings seasons now, but have reacted to the promise of infrastructure, tax reform, and all of that. The president up on the Hill, just, I think, completing his lunch now with Republican senators. He's expected to come out. It's not been a good day when you think of the unified move toward tax reform, and yet the market continues to do well. What's your gauge on their chances of getting something out of the Senate? It looks like we're getting bulletins now that they're expected to say they want to unveil their tax bill next week, November 1st.
Yeah, I think the fight that's been going on Twitter between the president and Senator Corker is really a shot across the bow at all of the deficit hawks. And in other words, Senator Corker, who's going to be leaving anyway, Trump is, you know, in his own foolish way, making an example of Senator Corker, and Corker making an example of Trump, of course. But he's basically, the president's using the bully pulpit to truly be a bully and to try to get the rest of the Republicans who aren't with him as far as, you know, the deficit hawks in particular. He's trying to get them on board with more or less the tacit threat of, do you want me to go after you?
That's interesting. Like, so Corker has been careful and said anything, he was in favor of tax reform, but he was going to watch the impact on the deficit carefully. So you think that's what this is about? The president saying to others, be careful, if you talk that way, you could be next.
Yes,
interesting.
I do. And I think that the fact that they, you know, the Senate passed that budget last week, Rand Paul stepped out with the Democrats, but they still got 51 votes, so they got it passed. That means that they could do under reconciliation, as long as they don't violate that $1.5 trillion in additional deficit, they could pass a tax program. So rather than just a one-time stab at it, they could have a new tax regime in place for the first time since Reagan did it. And I think that is why the markets are doing what they're doing.
John, I'm running out of reasons to go to my local Sears store now. Whirlpool is leaving?
Yeah. And that was both a good and a bad sign. Not that they're leaving, but the Whirlpool report was that they have significant cost or material costs are accelerating. In other words, the things that go into making the metal and so forth in the machines that Whirlpool sells are more expensive to Whirlpool, and therefore, unless they can pass it on to consumers, less profitable to Whirlpool. That's why the shares are down so hard today. Sears is a contributing factor, but I think the major thing really was that Whirlpool had this guidance that was so weak, and I think that's a bigger deal to them than the fact that Sears will not be selling Whirlpool appliances anymore.
The Caterpillar is fueling the Dow 3M as well. I want to ask quickly, though, about McDonald's. The share cost or the prices climbed more than 30% so far this year. Their third quarter earnings outbeating results. So has McDonald's turned a corner?
Yeah, and they've been on fire since they did. So, yes, McDonald's really doing a lot of things right, maintaining costs. The fact that the dollar's cheaper, that also helps them with the overseas sales.
They're going to bring a Big Mac. They're going to bring a Big Mac to the Najarian family office. You see that? They want about 3,000 to 5,000 restaurants to soon be delivering food.
Yeah, and you can imagine the additional sales that come from that kind of venture. It depends on the costs, of course, but at least the upside is that they're optimistic over how many more sales they can get through those same stores.
What's your tip? What are you watching for us today?
The one that I liked the most today was a 3D printer company called 3D Systems. DDD is the symbol. We were buying that one today. There was pretty aggressive buying in the name. It's up about 4.5%. It's only a $12 stock. It's still half the price of the highs of the year. So this is one of those that, rather than being in the nosebleed territory, I think is pretty cheap. It's about $1.3 billion. So if they do things right in the next couple reports, I think they get bought.
John Najarian, great to talk to you today. Thanks for taking time out. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen.
Follow John on Twitter at John Najarian. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here. He's a senior editor at DNA Info Chicago and comes by to time to time to talk about openings and closings in the city. Andrew, welcome back.
Hi, Steve.
I'll never forget that night. I was at the Double Door and surprise, surprise, the Rolling Stones came out on stage.
No, you weren't really there, were you?
No, but it's a great story.
You like to tell it, when it's not true.
Usually people are more polite, and they just say, well, it must have been nice, but I can't lie to you now.
Well, I'm a journalist, so I need some details.
Yes,
I'm going to have to cross-check it.
No, it didn't happen at all. It did happen. I just wasn't there, right?
Yeah,
this
right.
is one of those places where people used to pop up. What's going on with the Double Door? So then they got kicked out there. It's like,
oh, my gosh. This is an ongoing saga. It opened in 94. They got evicted last February, and like you say, they had this great history of presenting great acts and, very beloved place. But they were evicted from their building by the landowner over a lease fight. And the alderman there, Alderman Joe Marino, is allied with the owners of the club, not the building. Okay. And so
you want to have the alderman on your side.
Right. And so the club owners were evicted in February. In April, Marino, the alderman, put in for a zoning change, downzoning, which basically makes it more difficult for the landowner to
really?
Find new tenants. Yeah, and in May, Marino was caught on video, and it was aired on CBS2, him yelling at the landowner, the building owner, that you're not going to get a dime out of this building. It's going to be an empty building with no income for you and your family. So it's a very personal matter.
In Chicago, the aldermen pretty much control the zoning.
Right, right. So the way it works, it's called aldermanic privilege. And
that's
basically
what it's called.
The aldermen can decide what goes on in terms of zoning in their neighborhoods or in their wards, which, you know, has its pluses and its negatives. It gives them a lot of power, but it gives them a lot of responsibility, too. So an alderman can't say, well, I can't control the development in the neighborhood. They can control it by this use of the zoning.
So the way it works is the alderman will present to the city council, right,
mm-hmm.
an idea, or there'll be this zoning idea before the council, and the other 49 will say, what does Alderman Moreno think?
Right.
And then they always vote along with the local alderman, almost always.
Almost always, and sort of one hand washes the other, and because it's a source of great power to aldermen to be able to control the zoning. Anyway, so that zoning went through in October, and now there's news that the Double Door might reopen in a former furniture store at 1348 North Milwaukee. So it will stay in Logan, which is what the alderman really wanted to see.
Right.
Because it is a great attraction.
I remember when the Smashing Pumpkins were there. It was a great show.
You saw that too,
No,
huh?
I didn't see that one either, but I did read about it.
How about Elvis?
Elvis was good there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was heavy then. It was late.
Okay.
Tell me about this coffee shop opening. What a great idea.
Isn't it? This is in Logan Square at 3039 West Fullerton. A guy has an idea to open up a coffee shop called Sip of Hope, and he will use all the proceeds to support suicide prevention efforts, and it's a guy named Johnny Boucher, and he has a foundation called Hope for the Day, and he's very actively involved in anti-suicide efforts.
And good for him, and good for Dark Matter Coffee, right? They're donating the roaster, the coffee, and all of that.
Right. So Dark Matter is a kind of a small chain here in Chicago. They have three or four shops, and they'll provide the coffee. And the Sip of Hope folks have a fundraiser coming up on December 2nd. They need to raise $250,000 to get this thing launched, but they've already got $75,000, so they're pretty good. They're well on their way. And basically, it will not only serve coffee and donate the profits to the suicide groups, but they'll have a resource. They'll have a lot of resources.
And they said all the baristas will be trained as well to deal with crises like that.
Yeah, so they'll have mental health training. And this guy's had a lot of contact with suicide and wants to take a little bit more of a proactive public approach to preventing suicide. So it's pretty cool.
If all goes well, 3039 West Fullerton Avenue.
Yeah, right.
Andrew Herman, read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. We'll see you again soon. Kelly Leonard will be along a little bit later in the program. He is the host of the podcast Getting to Yes and we'll talk about his guest coming up this week on the podcast. It's about how leaders can learn from improvisation, some interesting ideas. So Kelly Leonard, just around the corner right now. Well, speaking of podcasts, Suzanne Muchen is the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can hear that at WGNradio.com. Looks at women in the workplace, among other things. Suzanne, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. I'm feeling like maybe you're cheating on me with that other podcast you just talked about.
Kelly will be...
I know how committed you are to mine.
Kelly will be actually in the studio. I notice you're on the phone, so... I don't choose favorites.
Out of sight, out of mind.
You know, I think the big talk today is going to be, the president and Senator Corker got into this sort of weird Twitter fight. I mean, Corker basically called him an untruthful president, and the president was untruthful. He said that Corker helped Obama with Iran, which was not true.
Right.
But then they all got together on Capitol Hill to talk about tax reform, which is got to be, I mean, as awkward as any awkward family Thanksgiving dinner, I can imagine.
So
I know the administration has sent out Ivanka Trump, right, to help build support for tax reform.
This is just such an interesting moment for Ivanka. And let me just ask you, have you seen her or heard her in recent weeks?
She's kind of been quiet.
She's been quiet. So it was clearly a big decision to send her out on the road, given the fact that she's really been laying low. So they send her to Pennsylvania, this was yesterday, to sell the tax reform package. And I think, Steve, the problem with that is that it's hard to imagine Ivanka Trump being a good salesperson to the general public and, you know, middle-class workers for this tax reform. And I think the reason they did it is because they wanted her to talk about, you know, the issue of child care costs for working mothers. But even on that, here's a woman who has had nothing but privilege and support and help being a working mother. I just can't imagine that they're buying it.
She copped to that, didn't she, in her speech?
Well, she absolutely said, and these, I think, were her exact words. She says, I wouldn't be able to do even a small fraction of what I was doing professionally or as a parent, just being so tired and overtaxed, if I didn't have access to the means to be able to put myself and children in the secure and safe place. That's nice. And that's nice. She acknowledged it. But in my experience in the communication world, if you don't want someone focusing on something, probably best not to go into a nice long narrative about it.
She just doesn't have the demeanor, sort of the folksy demeanor.
No.
To her credit, if she tried that, it would be worse. I interviewed her once.
Yeah.
I talked, right? And she told the story about how, you know, her childhood, how she would go to her school pageants and her dad would bring Michael Jackson. She did have an unusual upbringing, I guess.
She did. And I do think she has a role to play. And I wish she would be more active in playing it, which is if she really does believe her dad is a great guy, which I believe she does, talk to us about that. Humanize him. Help us understand the inner workings of someone who's very confusing to a lot of people. And in many ways, I think she could be a good spokesperson on that. We just haven't heard her do it well.
Okay, let's go to the Weinstein thing. You sent me a story about Matt Damon. Explain some of this for me. I'm interested in, I start to get a little defensive in that all of a sudden men were supposed to stop this, but I'm not. I think maybe Damon should have. I don't know what exactly happened here.
It's a tough thing. So Matt Damon, who was filming movie with Gwyneth Paltrow at a time she was dating Ben Affleck, who we all know they're sort of a twosome, Ben and Matt,
right,
had told Ben about her discomfort and harassment experience with Weinstein. And so what Matt is saying in this article is, I knew about it. She was talking about it with Ben, but I had decided, this is Matt talking, I had pretty much decided that she was handling it. And so it does raise the question, Stephen, I get your discomfort, right? Because in theory, doesn't that make all of us, not just men, all of us who might be 1 or 2 degrees of separation from someone being harassed, should we be raising our hands and telling someone about it? And I think this gets complicated because the question really is, what did he know? How bad was the story that he had heard? And was he asking whether Gwyneth wanted or needed the support in getting that story out? Because one of the things we've heard from a lot of women is they didn't feel like they had safe cover to really come forward.
Okay,
that,
so
to me, is an issue.
So that would be like me telling you that my wife told me she was uncomfortable and then expecting you to do something about that, right?
No, that's kind of think do something about it. I think it would be up to me to say, do you feel comfortable actually addressing this issue? And if you say, you know what, I got this, then I agree. For the third party, there's not much to do. But I think we're at a point where what's coming forward in a lot of these stories is women just didn't feel like they had anywhere to go. They didn't feel they could go to HR. Adam Oxstein was on Friday.
He just walked by the window.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's great. He works across the street.
Right.
So he said something very interesting, which I hadn't really thought about, which is there's a whole narrative right now about people should go to HR. Well, HR is responsible to the company. They're not there to protect the employees. They're there to protect the employer. So that doesn't make them bad or not safe spaces, but it certainly doesn't make them the obvious choice, especially for a woman who's afraid.
That's an interesting point. So there are no sort of legal obligations for HR to, if a worker goes to them and reports that they think that crime may have been committed, HR isn't legally obligated to do anything with that.
So the question is crime, right? That's a little bit of what we're seeing, even what Megyn Kelly said yesterday about Fox News. Clearly they knew. Clearly they were told exactly what was going on. Were they obligated to do something about it? It appears not.
Right. Okay, how do we make a segue from that to emojis?
Well, let's just talk about that being a sad face emoji story and go to a story that might put a little bit more of a happy face.
On my, the software, the iPhone update now provides emojis. Like if I'm typing a text and I say book, I still don't do it. I'm sorry. I use my words. I have been since I was 3 years old.
This, I think, goes along with the Steve Bertrand, who also wasn't a big Beyonce fan. And, you know, there's elements of pop culture you just can't embrace, and I love that about you. But emojis are a thing, Steve. And what's fascinating right now is they've become such a thing that there's not only a consortium called the Unicode Consortium that's actually like a governing body that decides which emojis get put on our phones.
We used to talk about that a lot with Scott Kleinberg when he was here, the people who make the call. And so there's a push now for comfortable shoes.
For comfortable shoes. This is a great story of a woman named Flory Hutchinson, who was home nursing her third child and was trying to text while she was doing it. And she wanted to put in an emoji for a shoe. And all that came up was this spiky pair of red heels. And she looked down at her baby and down at her own shoes and thought, that is not going to communicate my situation. And to her point, if you look at shoes for women, there's sneakers or there are heels. That's it. So she's really...
That's all I have in my closet.
Not me, my friend. I'm all about the heels, but I love that Flory did this. And so the designers have created what looks like almost a ballet flat, this royal blue ballet flat. And her point is, look, we've created diversity in all sorts of other ways with our emojis. We have people with different skin tones, and we have people who are doing salsa dancing with lots of different outfits on, but we have not yet conquered the discrepancy between those who wear heels and those who don't.
We'll live to fight another day. Suzanne Muschen, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Check out the podcast, The Big Payoff. You can hear that at WGNplus.com. Kelly Leonard is in the studio. He's the host of the podcast, Getting to Yes And. Well, that's just one of the many things Kelly Leonard does. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The podcast, Getting to Yes And, you can listen to that at WGNradio.com. And, of course, Kelly's been at Second City forever. And your guest this week, Harvard professor Richard Heifetz?
Ronald Heifetz.
Ronald Heifetz, sorry. Talks about improv and leadership?
Well, yeah. So he's a leadership expert, and he's from Harvard. And I got to be honest, I was a little intimidated talking to him. And I always try to jam.
You know what I do when I'm intimidated? I use the wrong name. That's what I do.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good one.
Okay.
See, I write down the stuff. So, you know, and I'm always trying to wedge in my improv stuff, let's be honest. You know, I'm trying to find the connection. Turns out Ron Heifetz was a musician who used to improvise musically with a dance troupe. So right away, he's like, no, leadership is an act of improvisation.
What does he mean by explaining that?
He means that when you improvise, you are required to work with other people who have differences and build things together. And he says the big problem we've got in our country right now, and he's talking about boardrooms, but he's also talking about politics, is that our leaders are not improvising together.
So they're coming through with their line.
It's just their thing.
Is that improvisation or is that engaged listening or what's, I mean?
Well, that's improvisation is all that, right?
Engaged listening, is that's what Getting to Yes And is kind of about.
Is exactly about. And he has a great quote where he goes, no one learns anything from looking in a mirror. And there's a lot of mirror gazing right now.
Explain that for me.
That when you are just surrounding yourself with people who think like you do and speak like you do, you're learning nothing. And he actually says if you look at nature, it's the bringing together of differences that makes stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it is. It's like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's exactly how we make stuff.
Oh, so in his world, then we would meet with the others, not the people not in our mirror, and then improvise with them.
Yeah. And he has a really cool term for this, which he says you need to get off the dance floor and get onto the balcony.
What does that mean?
And that means that too many leaders either get stuck in the weeds on the dance floor where they can't see the big picture, or they just stay in the balcony where they are disconnected from what's going on in their day-to-day business. If you're a good leader, you are constantly going between the dance floor and the balcony.
How many leaders does he say are good leaders? I mean, does he think that's a rare thing?
He has very little faith. I mean, I was very surprised about how depressing part of this conversation was, which was like, no, he was saying, I don't hold a lot of faith. He talked a lot about voters feeling betrayed for good reason. And we're talking both Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
He says the nature of politics in our country has become promising things that you can't deliver on.
And so when he's looking at leadership, is he strictly talking about political leadership or talking about the business world as well?
No, he's talking about corporate as well.
Right.
And, you know, he goes, there's some good stories and there's a lot of bad stories. One of the problems with leaders is a lot of people get promoted into leadership positions because they're good at their job. But then leadership is a different job.
Exactly.
And they aren't really trained to be leaders.
And you can be lousy at the job below.
Yeah.
And maybe a great leader and never get the shot at it.
Exactly. So we're going about it wrong. We're promoting wrong and we're not training right.
Ronald Heifetz is the guest of Kennedy Leonard's at Getting to Yes And, the podcast. And we'll figure out how to get to the right way with the podcast, right?
Yep.
Is it up now?
Yeah, it just went up.
All right. WGNradio.com. Thanks for coming by, Kelly.
Thanks, Steve.